of Florida law. Ask an attorney. Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law attorney. With attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Open on Saturday morning at 8:02. So if you have a legal question, maybe something you've been worried about during the week, or maybe you couldn't sleep last night worried about something, or maybe you just know want some legal advice about estate planning or a real estate matter or a family matter, family law matter, just about anything, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open, 877-943-9673. So if you have a legal question, a legal concern, something you'd like just to discuss, it doesn't even have to be a legal question. It can just be a problem you're facing, something you need to get through, something you need to talk to someone about. You really just don't have anyone that you trust to advise you, and they might have some self-interest in the matter as well. Hey, give me a call. Be glad to tell you what I think, what I know, and try to help in any way I can. Your question does help other people who are listening, because they get to learn too from your question, your experience, or whatever situation you're in. Again, I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. It's Saturday morning, and you are listening to a live show where you can call in and ask your legal question. Again, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. Broadcasting today from Jacksonville, and we're heard around 12 stations around Florida, so you might be listening in Central Florida on 90.3 FM. If you're listening in the Tampa Bay area, Tampa to Orlando to Sarasota, and north of Tampa as well, you're listening to one of the Salem stations, perhaps on 860, 570, 910, 930 in Sarasota. Central Florida's 90.3 FM. You might be listening in Sun City Center on their community station, their FM station there, 96.3. So if you have a legal question, all you have to do is to call no matter where you're listening. And people listen from all over the country, actually, on the web. Maybe all over the world. You can listen to this show anywhere on your computer or your smartphone. So again, toll-free number is 877-943-9673. So I had a couple of interesting probate cases this week. So people always surprised. It seems like they're always surprised when they learn when someone dies and they come to my office and they have their parents' or siblings' estate planning documents. So I asked them, I said, I guess you're here. I'm very sorry for your loss. I guess you're here to figure out what to do next. And they always say yes. My response then is, well, it totally depends on how assets are titled. So, for example, assets, if the deceased person had all of their assets in a living trust, then the answer is pretty simple. You take a death certificate to wherever the accounts are, become the trustee, we get you a tax number. You as trustee can then pay the bills, deal with creditors, and then distribute the estate according to the directions in the trust. If some of the accounts have beneficiaries on them, then they're automatically going to belong to the named beneficiary. If some of the accounts are jointly held with right of survivorship, they're going to automatically go to the survivor. If the deceased had assets just in their name, not jointly held, not in a trust, not with a beneficiary, then they're going to go through probate. And then there's always a discussion about why. So if you don't understand probate, if you have a will and just have a will, you've actually chosen to go through the probate process. All right, so let's go to our first caller. Let's give you the phone number where you can call 877, toll-free, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Scott in Jacksonville. Hey, Scott.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, and you?
Good, good. Yeah, I had a real estate question. I'll try to keep it short. My friend found a piece of property that we were going to kind of buy. So we made a deal. We signed a contract with the seller, and it went through the electronic, signature type thing, the DocuSign environment. So what ended up happening is we signed the contract like on a Sunday. Monday, my friend told me, the seller wanted to kind of meet, just to meet who was buying the property. So we met. I did not realize that he had signed the contract already late Sunday night, because I didn't really get a copy till Monday at some time. I did get a text from the real estate agent saying that, hey, the contract's null and void because I didn't sign the second email that came through with some escrow documents, basically saying, hey, this is what the escrow cost is estimated to be. You have to initial these, and they weren't initialed by the date on the contract. So she said the contract's null and void, we need a new contract. So I said, okay, send a new contract. I signed a new contract on Friday. They said they were going to sign over the weekend. I never heard back. And then on Monday, lo and behold, he sold the property to somebody else. So I didn't know, since the original contract was signed, I didn't realize it was signed, but the extra documents weren't initialed. Is that an issue?
Well, the original contract was signed by the seller and both buyers, or just one buyer?
Everybody signed the original contract. We just didn't initial the escrow documents.
And what kind of deposit did you put down?
I asked about a deposit, and that's when I got a text saying that the contract was null and void. And it seems to me that they waited the 5 days. They kind of drew it out until Friday, the 5 days, and they threw that out.
Well, I think you possibly have an argument to pursue that, but the question would be, would you want to spend all the attorney fees with a chance that the court might rule it not completed or complete understanding of the parties? I mean, there's going to be an argument on both sides to proceed with that. So would it benefit you to proceed with that and win? And you also didn't make a deposit, so I bet the contract called for a deposit.
It did within five days, I think it said. But to me, it's like they delayed knowing that, told me it was null and void, and then here, sign a new contract, and then they wait until after the 5 days and go, oh, I sold it to somebody else now.
Well, they were dealing, you could perhaps have a, you could argue you had a completed contract and they were dealing in bad faith. I think, how much was the property going to sell for?
The contract was for $350.
And how much was the down payment?
It was, I think, $10,000.
I'd probably sit down with a real estate litigation attorney, take in your documents, explain the story. The property's already sold, so it would be an economic loss type of argument on your part. Then there'd be a big mess trying to reverse the existing contract, but it might be worth your while. I think I would go sit down with a real estate litigation attorney to let them review the documents and explore your options with you.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Let's go to Regina.
Hi. Good morning.
Yeah. Where are you calling from? Good morning.
Sarasota, Florida.
Sarasota. Okay. What can we do for you?
Okay. This is really kind of complex, so I'll try and keep it as brief as I can. I have one of my parents died a few years ago. And there were two properties involved, both of them being in foreclosure, one of them being in Florida, the other one in New York. There are multiple siblings in my family. which the majority of us do not communicate. So there really hasn't been any communication as far as what to do about these two foreclosures.
So both parents are deceased?
Yes, both parents are deceased.
Mm-hmm. And was there a probate estate opened?
Yes, there was, very recently.
The personal representative that's in charge of the estate now would be the one to legally deal with these foreclosures.
Okay, so I did receive some paperwork on the house in Florida, and there was a will drawn up exactly 2 days before my parent died and signed by him, although he was declared incompetent like in 2010. So I don't
or by the court, he was declared incompetent through a guardianship proceeding?
No, by a physician. So I don't know exactly how that works.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Does the properties have any equity in them? I mean, they're in foreclosure. Could they be sold and anybody deriving the benefit from the sale?
There could be. Now, what the property in New York had a reverse mortgage on it. And I've received papers, numerous times from a bank saying that, there's like $500,000 owed. However, the house is worth, almost $900,000. So I don't know exactly how that works, even with the bank sale. Like, do they sell it and the difference is, distributed?
Yeah, if there's equity left after the payment of the mortgage off, sure, that goes to the heirs.
Okay, so...
But the personal representative that's in charge of the estate is the one in charge responsible for handling all of this.
Well, the personal representative is only trying to deal with the house in Florida. And they basically said in the papers that I received, the property in New York is an entirely separate matter.
Yeah, here's the deal on that. So real estate, now the parents were both Florida residents?
No.
They're New York residents?
My father became, I guess, a Florida resident when he was brought down here in 2014, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And he was the last to die?
I'm sorry.
He was the last to die?
Yes, my mother died many years ago.
Okay. All right, so the Florida probate would include all of his personal assets, all of his bank accounts, all of his financial accounts, and the Florida real estate. The New York real estate has to be handled with what's called an ancillary proceeding. So the person named in the will would hire a New York attorney just to deal with the New York real estate in what's called an ancillary proceeding. So yes, it is two different matters. But still, if the will leaves everything equally to his children, then any equity in either one of the properties would have to be equally divided to the children, if that's what the will calls for.
Well, the will doesn't. The will only leaves it to one person.
Okay, and the will, okay, so...
can't be the executor, I guess, because his wife is now the executor. I believe it's something related to his criminal background, I believe.
Yeah, if you're a felon in Florida, you can't serve as a personal representative.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so here's what you need to do. So if you, there are two common ways to contest a will. One is undue influence, and the other is incompetence. You might have both of those as a fact in your case from what I've just heard. So you need to hire a probate litigation attorney to contest the will. Yeah, to contest the will.
Okay, so start with that.
Yeah, that's your starting point, because you got to get the will set aside. You got to have the doctor's letter or statement he's incapacitated, maybe the doctor's testimony to have the will set aside. And then if the will is set aside, instead of it all going to one person, it would go equally to all of the children.
Okay, and then my other question is, in regards to that same, when you go declare, I guess, inventory on probate?
Yes.
The only thing that's declared is the house that's in foreclosure. I don't know what are their assets he had or what are the debts he had. I'm assuming the personal representative is bound by law to declare that.
The personal representative's, he's only one beneficiary in the will, so you got to get the will set aside before you really have any rights. Because there's only one person named as a beneficiary in the will. The personal representative doesn't have any duty but to that beneficiary. And if it's themselves, then you're out there with an invalid will that you're going to have to prove that's invalid before you have any rights to any of the assets or any information about the estate.
Got it. Okay. Well, we'll start from there.
All right. If you need a referral, my firm does not do estate litigation, but I could give you a referral if you don't have one or can't find one quickly.
Yeah, that would be excellent. Do I need to call?
Just contact my office.
Your office? Okay.
Yeah, I'll give out my information here very shortly. All right, thanks.
And you said it was a litigation?
Yeah, probate litigation attorney.
Probate litigation. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Jenny in Clearwater.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I've been waiting to all week for Saturday to get up and call you.
Well, great. Well, thanks for calling.
I have a sister who's 62 years old and an extremely poor mental health condition, which is declining. She's in Polk County, and I live here in Pinellas. And our brother is up in Orlando, and she lives in a 55-plus tower where meals are provided, and she doesn't drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
And she's become less and less responsible with her finances, with taking her medicine, going down to some periods she doesn't go down for meals. And while we feel, you know, as a family, my mother's in Florida also, agree that she's not overly competent, we don't really feel like having her declared incompetent is really going to be in her best interest, and we're kind of concerned, and obviously that would raise a lot of issues. But we do realize something has to be done, and we're concerned for her.
Has she given anyone a power of attorney?
Well, that's what I'm getting to. Not overall. That's what I want to ask about our possibilities. I tried to help her with finances, and she has an IRA account from a divorce, which has got a good amount. She's been scammed in the past, and my biggest concern is someone's going to scam her out of what she has, as well as just her basic getting stuff done. So she had asked me. She called up the holder of the IRA, and she gave them enough concern about her mental health that they said, you have to have a full agent, which is, I guess, basically a power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked me to do this. And so I have two questions. I have... in the short term, I want to understand what it means, and do I have, like, liability if I become her agent for this IRA, and, you know, like, if it goes down or something like that. And then in the longer term, we're wondering how to, you know, she's not competent on this, she's not competent on the rest of her finances, and if she's willing to cooperate with us, what are our options with the rest of her finances and her health savings account and her, you know, bills, getting bills paid and so forth?
Well, I would strongly recommend she have a power of attorney and give it to someone.
Okay.
Because there are really two choices in this matter. She gives someone a power of attorney, or she gets declared incompetent because she's unable to manage her finances and someone's going to take advantage of her. Those are both great reasons for her to be letting someone else handle the estate. So the
Can she have two of them?
Yeah, you can have...
Can my brother and I both be?
Yes.
Okay.
As to the liability issue, you're not personally liable for her debts, but you have a prudent investor rule, basically, where you have to, you know, make prudent. You can invest in an African gold mine, for example, with her funds. That would not be prudent.
Right.
Long as you have a fairly conservative financial advisor you're working with, I don't think you'd have any concerns.
Okay.
We have offices, by the way, in both Pinellas and Polk.
Okay. County, now, would the POA be like a blanket one, and what is that? What would that cover?
The power attorney. We have a durable power attorney document that's like 14 pages. It has 106 different powers, and it also has powers relating to health, being a healthcare surrogate. And so all of those powers cover just about everything you could imagine, and the purpose of the document is so you don't be declared incompetent because you've given someone the power of attorney to act in your behalf. If a person wanted to do a very limited power of attorney, like just sell my home in New York or something, you can have a power of attorney with, you know, one or two powers instead of 106. But most people do the full power of attorney just to give broad powers to do anything so they won't be declared incompetent.
Okay. So having my brother and myself declared durable power of attorney would enable us to do whatever we need to do for her to protect her. But she would still have full rights in her accounts and stuff.
Yes. And she also has the power to revoke the power of attorney at any time.
Right.
So.
Okay. Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. That sounds good.
All right. Well, thank you. That was a great question. I enjoyed answering that one for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go to Pam in Jacksonville.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing great. And you?
I'm good. Thank you. I have a question regarding homesteading. I have a piece of property, which is homesteaded, and my husband purchased the property next door, which is just in his name. Now, tax-wise, would there be any difference in combining the properties and homesteading the whole thing, or would there, you know, not be any advantage to doing that?
Okay, so there are two properties side by side?
Right.
And you both live in, it's one complex where you both live in and use both properties?
There's one complex that we both live in. The other is just a piece of land.
Piece of land. Yeah, well, if it's they're side by side, you could get a homestead exemption on both parcels.
Okay, would I have to combine them both? And see, one is in my name and one is in his name. Could we combine them and then just homestead the whole thing?
Yeah.
I mean, would it make any difference?
Well, I think it'd make a little bit of difference on. Yeah, I think it'd make a little bit of difference on tax.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Jack in St. Petersburg.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Two questions. One, you updated my inter vivos trust and new will and probate power of attorney in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's changed. Is there any reason to have you review it again?
Well, generally, we send a letter to clients after somewhere between 3 and 4 years, generally advising them that it would be wise to update their power of attorney. And the reason why is that even though it might be very similar, almost the same document, it'll have a current date. And a lot of banks, financial, medical people tend to resist honoring a power of attorney that's 3 or 4 years old. So to avoid the hassle and somebody not trying to honor it because it's old, you just do a new one every 3 or 4 years with a current date. It's a fairly inexpensive document to update. So that's our advice.
Okay. Second question. We're in the stage of downsizing, and we have identified a property which we have an interest in. The owner died in, I think, October, November of 2017, and the property is vacant, and her will is in probate in Pinellas County.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea how long that would take? I did write a letter to the estate of and never heard anything back. Any idea how long? And, of course, I don't know whether we really like the property once we get inside.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's been in it since then, apparently, other than somebody checked it, I'm told.
So you wrote a letter to the probate attorney?
I wrote a letter to the estate of and her address, and it never came back, so I assume it was forwarded. Is there anything else that should be done? Just wait and see?
Well, let me tell you, we do probate cases, and I get lots of mail from people who want to buy real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you want to get someone's attention, you find out who the attorney handling the estate is, and then you send a letter directly to the attorney or the personal representative. That information is readily available. You can go down to 315 Court Street, ask to see the probate file of the... do you know the deceased person's name?
Yes. I looked online and found and there's been some activity in the court.
Yeah, there's filing the petition to start the probate, the appointment of the personal representative, all that's a public record.
What is a cavitor?
Well, there's a form you can file on if you are waiting.
Somebody named as a cavitor. That's why I'm in the records.
Yeah, what you're referring to is a person can file a document in the court so they're notified when the estate proceeding gets started. And
no,
that's probably a creditor.
I wouldn't be surprised if we're a daughter or something like that, but I'm just looking at what's in the public online records without paying for the will and that sort of thing.
Well, what you really want to do is to either contact the personal representative or the attorney handling the estate.
And they're likely to get back and see.
More likely than just if you send a blank letter to the estate of.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. We have 20 office locations around Florida. We have several in Pinellas, several in Polk County, several in Jacksonville. We have offices in Hillsboro, Tampa area. We have offices in Lakewood Ranch. We have offices in Pasco County, Zephyr Hills, Trinity area. We have offices from east to west coast and up to Jacksonville, all down the I-4 line there. And if we can help you in any way, all you have to do is to call our toll-free office number. And the lady who needed the referral for the probate litigation attorney, I'd be glad to find someone for you to help you with that. If you want to make an appointment in any of our offices, we don't charge for the first appointment. In many practice areas, particularly estate planning, there's no charge to review documents and to discuss with you your options in estate planning. Toll-free office number is 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. By the way, you do a lot of speaking engagements, all types of venues, speak to coffee club meetings in your clubhouse, speak to Kiwanis Rotary clubs, speak in a lot of churches. Any club that meets that has a speaker, regardless of the size of the group, I'd love to come do those. There's no fee or anything. You can call our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. I've been invited now twice to do my Trial of Jesus presentation that I've prepared and done many, many times over the years. I'm getting ready to do that a couple of times this year. So if you're interested in any topic we can come up with, amount of time, topic, place, and I'd be glad to talk to you. Again, 1-800-226-3529. Let's go to Jay in Jacksonville.
Yes, good morning, Joe. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and you?
Good, good. Hey, I have a question for you. I don't know if you can help me. It has to do with a purchase of a car.
Mm-hmm.
So I purchased a car in March of 2018 through Avis Car Sales.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like usual, car dealers, they'll give you an auto check or a Carfax. And the Carfax shows no accidents or anything on it. So in July, I have another Carfax done. It wasn't Carfax. Actually, the first one was auto check, right? The second one's Carfax, shows no accidents. That's that in July now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like a month ago, I having issues with the car. And I'm deciding, well, maybe I need to sell it. So I go out and I get a from a dealer. They give me a car, another Carfax, and they tell me it has an accident on it. And, of course, they don't want to give you the money that the car is worth. So now I'm like, wait a minute. I was told it didn't have any accidents. So I go back.
Do you have that documentation?
Yes.
Okay.
And I go back to Avis, and I tell them, hey, you give me an auto check that states that I don't have an accident on this car when I purchased it from you. Now they're telling me that I do. Now, the gentleman at the office that sold me the car was very helpful. He tells me, well, I'm going to call up, you know, the company and see what we can do for you. Either way, what I'm saying is they also give you in writing a paper that states we won't sell a car. You know, you won't find a car.
Yeah, I think the first seller of the car has some liability here. So what do you think the difference is that you would lose because you bought a car that had an accident? What's the monetary difference?
Well, I think it was close to $2,000.
Okay. So that's what they have small claims court for in Florida? Any matter under $5,000, you don't have to pay an attorney. You can go down and fill out some forms at the small claims court, file your claim. And what I often advise clients to do is to go down to small claims court, get the forms, fill them out, and then mail them to the person that you think's responsible for this and tell them you really don't want to do this. Can we settle this matter without going to court show them you're interested by getting the small claims court forms ahead of time and filling them out. I tell you, that gets their attention.
Okay.
If you just write a letter, I'm going to sue you because you did this, I mean, they just disregard that. If you've got the forms already filled out and you're ready to take some action, then they pay more attention. That's my experience anyway.
All right. Okay. All right. Thank you for the advice.
Appreciate RJ. It. All right. Thanks for calling. Hey, you're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. We have 20 minutes left in the show. And if you want to call, the phone lines are open right now at 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Be glad to take your call. You only have 19 minutes left now. All right, so one of our probate cases this week came in, and the amount of money left to be probated was $4,300, I think, somewhere around there. And they were, it was a bank account. It was a Wells Fargo bank account with $4,300 in it. So the client says, well, how am I going to get this money? And I said, well, I'll tell you what. There are three levels of probate in Florida. There's a probate if you're under $6,000. There's a probate if you're between $6,000 and $75,000. And then there's a probate if you're over $75,000. So in this case, the lady, her brother had died, and she had paid more than $6,000, actually, for the funeral bill and medical bills. So I said, well, look, you don't need to hire an attorney for this one. What you do is you take the paid. The person also didn't have a will. So you take the paid funeral bill and the medical bills and the death certificate and take them down to the probate court in the county where the person died, and they'll do a disposition without administration, it's called. Basically where this person can recoup some of their money that they had spent on the funeral bills and last medical bills. So there are three levels of probate. There's the disposition without administration, which I just talked about. There's the summary administration, which is a proceeding between $6,000 and $75,000. And then there is formal administration of anything over $75,000. The summary is not going to work if they're creditors, usually. So if there's a creditor issue, you can't do the simplified summary probate. Unless you're going to put yourself on the hook that all the creditors would be paid. Let's go to Shirley. Hey, Shirley.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Tampa. Thanks so much for taking my call.
No problem. What can we do for you?
Well, I have just recently filed for bankruptcy, and I put in all of the papers. There is an outstanding student loan that is... one is in my name, one is in a parent's name, but they're actually they were taken out for minor children. And so I was wondering if I need to file an adversary complaint form and name this as a priority debt.
You know, one of my attorneys in the office deals with bankruptcy issues. I know student mm-hmm. loans are generally not, you can't discharge
right.
those. So if you call my office, I'll give you the extension and the first name of the attorney, and you can talk with him about if there's anything you can do with trying to deal with this student loan issue.
Okay.
So he's in Pinellas County, so it's 727-586-3306, extension 116.
Mm-hmm.
And his name is Jim.
Jim.
Yeah,
all
and
he should
be able to nail down, you know, he could narrow your question and probably give you an answer as to what you can and can't do.
Perfect.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's go to Mike.
Hello?
Hey, Mike, where are you calling from?
I'm just driving by Daytona at the moment. I was listening to your program.
You're calling from where?
I'm stopped in Daytona.
Oh, Daytona. Okay.
Yes, sir. I just had a quick question. I was applying for jobs online this week, and I got a whole heap of emails and scam mails and stuff. One in particular was, I got a call. This person claimed to be an agent from SSA, Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
He says your number has, your Social Security number has been suspended because of some kind of activities.
No, that's...
Would you ever get a call from someone like that?
No.
Would you receive a letter from the SS board?
Yeah, no, that sounds like a scam call to me for sure.
And I think I did the wrong thing. He gave a callback number. I'm Officer XYZ. And I called back the number. You know, what the hell is wrong with you? And there was no answer.
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't get a call, right?
No, they wouldn't call you for that information. You would. I've never even heard of a Social Security number being suspended either, actually. So,
since he had my phone, is there any way I did something wrong by calling back that number just to clarify?
No, I don't think, as long as you didn't give him your Social Security number or any charge card or bank information or didn't pay anything, I think you're probably fine.
All right.
That's probably what they would have been seeking at some point if you had continued talking to the fellow.
I called it right back. Who are you? Introduce yourself. Give me your barge number or something. And there was no answer.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I do. I get aggravated with getting calls, you know, after dinner and during the night and on weekends. And I usually, when I do answer the phone, I usually just let it go to voicemail and ignore it. But when I do answer, I first thing I say is, can I have your name, please? And then they... And then I asked for their address, and I said, look, you know, I'm on the do not call list, and I'm filing a suit against anybody who calls me, so can I please have your address? And I usually get a click. And sometime, hopefully before that, I tell them, please take my name off of this list. I don't know if that works very well. I have been getting less calls lately.
Well, I was at work, so I didn't answer it, so it was a voicemail, you know, he left a voicemail, and I called back number. All right, I guess it was a scam, but I was just, they would send you a letter or something like that.
Oh, absolutely, but I've never heard of a person's Social Security number being suspended, right?
I guess he didn't get to talk to me, so he left the callback number or whatever.
All right.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for your
All right, thanks, Mike. Let's go to Dan.
Morning, Joe.
Hey, Dan.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering if you would compare and contrast Trust versus Lady Bird as far as preparation and preparing a will and attorney, power of attorney and all that.
Yeah, where are you calling from, Dan?
St. Petersburg.
All right.
So I may have to hang up on you, Joe, just to let you know, because I get static on this phone. And
all right, well, I'll be glad to answer that. I get that question all the time, actually. All right, here's my comparison between a Lady Bird deed and a living trust. I'm in favor of the trust method. And the reason why, somebody hang up that phone. Oh, all right, there we go. So so here's the difference. If you have your property in a living trust, the successor trustee can take over and be in charge of that property if you become incapacitated before death. You know, it might have to be sold. You might have to be dealing with issues with insurance companies. There are a lot of things where if you become incapacitated for a period of time before you die, and it's in a living trust, the successor trustee can deal with that property. With a ladybird deed, it's like a paid on death account where nothing really happens until death. There are also numerous title issues. I've talked to title companies about this numerous times. There are numerous title issue problems with a ladybird deed. To pass on effective title and do all the things that need to be done with that. So even though both methods avoid probate, I'm certainly in favor of using a trust instead of a ladybird deed as a way to deal with properties. And if you have a trust for your other assets anyway, you don't need a ladybird deed because a trust was a good way to avoid probate as well. Let's go to Marie in Winter Haven. Hey, Marie. Hey,
good morning. I have a question. My mother is getting up in years, and she broke her hip. She cannot get out of the house anymore. She's okay mentally. we were going through her papers. My sister, I have a couple of, let's see, there's four children altogether. And I was going through some of her papers. She keeps wondering, you know, if everything's in order. So I was going through some of them the other day, and I ran across her trust, of course. And on the back there is an exhibit or a
Schedule A.
Pardon?
Probably a Schedule A, it's called.
Okay. Where she names, like, six or seven charities that she wants to get quite, one of them is, like, six figures.
Well, okay, hold on a second. So, do you know, I'll probably need to review this trust for you, but usually you don't list your beneficiaries on an exhibit.
Uh-huh.
You list your beneficiaries are named inside the document on a article called Distribution Upon Death or something mm-hmm. very similar.
Well, we have that's in there. But this is
It could very well be if she tried to change that with just an exhibit
mm-hmm.
and it's not signed, witnessed, and notarized properly, or at least signed and witnessed properly, it could be invalid.
Well, here's the thing. It is that all that has been done. Okay. What I wanted to ask you is since that document was executed, one of the people that she wanted to get money has been, well, at the time it was okay, but now they've lost their ECFA accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, all the siblings agreed that we do not want that particular charity to get that much money. We would rather it go to another charity.
Well, is Mom still competent to sign an amendment?
Yes. Now, what I want to ask you, I am named as I have a durable power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
So could I do that for her because she can't get out of the house? Could I go to an attorney and get that done?
Well, I'd have to see your power of attorney,
uh-huh.
see if it has the power where you can change or create wills, trust, or make amendments.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But really, the best bet that I would think would be for an attorney to talk to your mother, one-on-one, have
mm-hmm.
the changes. If the attorney that did the trust is still around, that would probably be your best choice.
He's retired.
All right. So, and where does your mother live?
Lakeland.
Yeah, well, I have a Lakeland office, but basically if I could see the trust and talk to Mom, and I could do an amendment, and the amendment could be signed in her house, uh-huh. and I like to be on the phone telephonically to walk everybody through,
uh-huh.
and make sure her Mom knows what she's doing, and kind of supervise the witnesses and the notary in getting it done.
Uh-huh.
So you'd have to find two witnesses, and they're all kind of mobile notary people that can go out to a place. I just like to be present telephonically during the meeting. But it can easily be changed that way.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking my call.
All right. But if you wanted to go, if you have your own attorney, for example, and you wanted to use that attorney, I'm sure they could do something similar as well.
Well, you drew up a trust for me.
Oh, okay.
So
well, hey, come see me. I'll take care of it for you then.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Joe in Crystal River.
Hello.
Hey, Joe.
I have a question concerning a will. I feel as though that the statute of limitations has expired. It was my dad was the sole... Two brothers, sister died. They were the sole survivors, and the will did not mention my dad's name at all, which was a bit confusing. And the health care provider of my dad's brother, who was the executor of the will, called us and said that there was hanky-panky and that my dad was owed like $750,000 out of $1.5 million assets of my aunt. And also when his sister died in the hospital, the brother was caught with his son with a comatose woman with a hand on the pen and changing a will or signing a new will. And my dad received nothing.
How long ago did this happen?
It was in the 2000s, but I feel certain that the statute of limitations expired on that, but I was wondering if fraud could be proved, whether anything could still be done on that. We have witnesses if we could locate them. I'm his son. I have his POA now. I did not have it then. Dad has severe dementia, and
well, if you call me, I'll give you the name of a probate litigation attorney for you to talk to.
Okie dokie.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. If you'd like to contact our office, first of all, let me offer our free estate planning poster sheet that we have. It's a full-size poster sheet on one side with five articles about estate planning and what your options are, explanations of probate fees, wills, trust. It's a great. I give away these at all speaking engagements, and I get lots of requests every week for us to mail these out. If you'd like one, I'd be glad to mail it to you. It's free. On the other side of the sheet, it's all of our contact information, phone numbers, attorneys, website, radio shows. If you'd like it, there's one of three ways you can get it. You can call our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. Our toll-free office number, 1-800-226-3529. If you want to email me for the poster sheet, just your name and address, to Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com, joe@attypip.com. If you want to text me for it, I need your name and address, and you can text it to 727-667-3967. Text your name and address to 727-667-3967. Let's go to Les in St. Pete. Hey, Les.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I live in a mobile home park that everyone owns a share, mm-hmm. and we're all over 55. And recently, we vote a board in. And recently, three of the members that were living there, which aren't there now, had actually sued the mobile home park in the tune of a few $100,000. They turned around our board, ended up settling with them for that amount of money from our money, which is the share from our reserve funds that was in our accounts. And during the meeting, I asked twice, what were we sued for? They never disclosed any of this to us. And the board suggested I just go, it's public record. Well, I couldn't find anything, and they will not tell any of us why we were sued. Under Florida law, do they not have to disclose this to all the shareholders?
I would think they would. So I think you probably need to have an attorney to write a demand letter to get the information you require.
Okay. So have them write a letter to the board or the president?
Yeah. Yeah, the attorney will figure out who to write the letter to.
Okay. Thank you very much
for
your time.
Thank you. Let's go to Lee in Orlando. Lee in Orlando, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. We have about a minute.
I am calling because we live at a home, me and my husband, in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And he moved away with all the house papers. Now, I don't know what to do. Can you tell me what to do?
Husband moved away?
Yes.
Okay. And you want to know, well, actually, you could go down to the courthouse and get a copy of the deed.
Yes.
If you're worried about the ownership of the property, you could get a copy of the deed. So go to the local county courthouse where your property is located and just order a copy of the deed. And you make sure the address of the tax bill and all of that is mailed to you.
Yes.
And you might need to talk to a family law attorney about what your options are here.
Okay. Thank you so much. Because what really happened is that, you know, he moved away. He didn't tell me anything.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't tell me when he was moving. I just see him move out.
Yeah, well, I'm so sorry. But you need to protect yourself and your home, and you might just need an attorney to look at the deed and see what's going on there for you.
Okay,
all right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. You keep tuned for our... your local station there, and I'll be back next week at the same time. So long.